Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive, putting together the birthday tour for me. It's a birthday bye week. Woo, 1 in 5. We have Raven Scratch-Offs giveaway. We're going to be at Costas later on in the week. I'm organizing a little birthday thing here this week through a bye week. We're also going to be at Coco's in 2 weeks. I'll be telling you more about that. I'm going to get back over to Pizza John's. Because it's my birthday. It was Luke's birthday 2 weeks ago. Usually our Octobers are meant for having our noses pressed up to the glass, at least watching the Yankees or the Dodgers participate in the playoffs. So it's kind of nice watching Seattle and Toronto. But this 1 in 5 football team thing, Lucas, I've been here a long time, 30 years. I was actually a reporter the first 26 and a half of them. 1 in 5. They say rarefied air when it's good. Lowest lows. I don't. You have at it. I'm going to give you the opportunity. You were in the Kevin Byrne press box on Sunday afternoon for the proceedings. 3 points, 1 and 5. Players scattering out the back door of the locker room, not talking to anybody before the bye. Lamar's still hurt, but he's coming back and going to save them. A lot of narrative here. None of it's good. None of it's good, man.
No, it's not. It's funny. I was making the comment to a couple other people in the press box, you know, in the aftermath of a 17-3 loss. I said, it feels like this just picked up where baseball season left off. I mean, you think about where the Orioles were Memorial Day weekend, which, you know, we're a similar point in the calendar, right? I mean, as football season goes, I mean, you play once a week, it's a different ebb and flow to it, but they were 16-34. And at that point in time, I think I made the comment over and over and over that, no, I didn't think they were going to lose 110 games, which was the pace at that point in time. And I was right about that. They played better, but the question was always going to be how much better that you're going to overcome the hole that you dug yourself into. And I feel a very similar way about this football team at this point in time. No, I don't think the Ravens are going to go 3-14. I don't.
They're not done. They're just D-O-N.
It's just, yeah. You look at this now when you're 1-5. And what's ironic about this game, I'm not shocked or even in a vacuum overly discouraged by what I saw solely on Sunday. I think what we saw against Houston last week was just a total embarrassment, right? You question the effort. You question the heart. You question the fight. They were terrible defensively. Offensively, they've scored 10 points. It was a game where you looked at that and said, they wouldn't have won with that kind of effort, even if Lamar Jackson had been playing. Whereas Sunday felt much more winnable if you had Lamar Jackson.
It felt like Tyler Huntley might save him.
right. I mean, there were positives here. And just humor me for a moment, because I'm not going to be very positive overall, but they ran for 179 yards. Derrick Henry eclipsed the century mark for the first time since week one. 17 points allowed from what we've seen from this defense is a step in the right direction, and certainly that group put up a much more representative fight than they did a week ago and should have, with Kyle Hamilton and Marlon Humphrey back on the field. And obviously we talked about some of the changes with Alohi Gilman and three safety packages and all that. They've showed that, and I think there were some elements of that that you can move forward with and be better as a defense. They won the time of possession for the first time all season. And not only did they do that, Nestor, they won it by more than 15 minutes. I mean, I don't want to say controlled the clock, because there's a different way of, you know, connotation to that. But certainly their offense was on the field far more than the Rams' offense was on the field. These were the kind of things we were talking about that were necessary for this team to pull off an upset in either of these last two games, understanding that, no, you're not going to win a ton of games with Lamar Jackson on the sideline, in the same way that I don't think the Chiefs have much of a chance to win without Patrick Mahomes, or the Bills without Josh Allen. We're seeing what the Bengals look like without Joe Burrow, right? They've lost 4 in a row. So there were elements to that where, and John Harbaugh alluded to that in the post game when he said there are plenty of things we can build on, but that rings hollow when you've lost 4 in a row, right? That rings hollow when you're 1-5. And now you look at the math, and historically speaking, four teams since the merger have come back from a 1-5 start to make the playoffs. and you just look at where we are in this 17 game schedule era, 10-7 has been the magic number. There's been one team that's gone 10-7 since they switched to this 17 game schedule that hasn't made the playoffs. It was Seattle last year. So that's the magic number you're looking at without needing a ton of help and like fluky 8-9, 9-8. I mean, Washington won the NFC East 5 years ago with a 7-9 record. So if we're going to throw out those elements because that's relying on so many other teams to be really bad, you've got to win 9 of your last 11 here. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. And sure, Lamar Jackson's going to come back. And sure, Roquan Smith's going to come back. And sure, Patrick Ricard's going to come back. And Chidobe Awuzie is going to come back. But guess what? That doesn't mean you're exempt from injuries the rest of the way, as we learned on Sunday when Tavius Robinson breaks his foot. And now an edge rusher group is down two guys from where they were a week ago at this time because you traded Adafe Owe. And I'm not criticizing the Owe trade per se, but that's what you're talking about here. That doesn't mean you're going to, just because you had a bunch of injuries through the first five or six games of the season, does not mean that you're going to be injury free the rest of the way. So that's where you look at this thing and just say, even if they can solve these issues that they're having in all three phases, I mean, let's call a spade a spade. I mean, we don't talk as much about the special teams, but it's not as though the special teams has been so good that it's helping them win football games. Although they got a nice punt return on Sunday. That was good to see, I suppose. But I mean, they're just, the consistency. Is it going to be there with the offensive line? Is it going to be there with the defensive line? Are you going to stay healthy enough? Are you going to figure out how to run the ball in short yardage? Can you punch the ball in from the 1 yard line? We've seen that issue more than once in this 2025 season. It's a
And the
lot of
play calling.
Sure, the
when
play
that
calling,
happens to you.
but also the execution. At some point in time, the offensive line has to, you've got
Get
to
a yard.
move people, right? Because we've seen, the funny thing is, and look, I'm not saying I like the play calling in that sequence just to humor that specific part of the game, but I've also heard people clamor for the Ravens to run the tush push more at some other short yardage opportunities this season. At some point, you've got to execute. And yeah, they ran the ball better, and that was good to see. I was happy to see that. The 179 rushing yards and Derrick Henry getting some space and the offensive line getting more downhill than they've been in quite some time. But you also are going to be in spots where you need 1 yard. The defense knows you need 1 yard. They know you're going to run the football. You've got to be able to pick it up sometime, at least at a far higher rate than they've been able to do this year. So it's a lot of ifs that I just went over, a lot of ifs and buts and hypotheticals. And look, I am not going to sit here and downplay the absence of Lamar Jackson and what that does for your football team, right? And like I said, the Bills aren't winning Jack without Josh Allen. The Chiefs aren't winning without Patrick Mahomes. We're seeing the Bengals in real time without Joe Burrow. So I'm not going to sit here and just say, well, next man up when it comes to Lamar Jackson and going to Cooper Rush. Although I'll say the Ravens whiffed trying to upgrade the backup quarterback because he was terrible on Sunday and wasn't good last week. But so many other things went wrong last week that Cooper Rush was like number 8 or 9 on my list. But he was high on the list this week. I mean, he was bad. So you'll get Lamar back, and that's great, and that's very important. That's the Captain Obvious statement. And they will absolutely be a better football team with him back on the field than they've been the last two games. But that said, so many of these issues that I mentioned, they were having even before the injuries, even before Lamar. They were having issues running the ball with Lamar on the field, which is kind of the first time that's ever happened, right? So got a lot of soul searching to do. They've got a lot of looking in the mirror to do during this bye week to get right physically. Reset, coaches go back into the lab and try to find answers. Players talking to each other and putting in some work this week before they get a well-deserved respite. The long NFL season's brutal on these guys physically. I'm not going to deny that, but I mean, they come out of the bye, it's go time. Your margin for error is none, right? I mean, to win 9 of 11, sure. The Ravens have gone on some runs like that with Lamar at the helm. They absolutely have. 2019 and certainly 2 years ago when they got on an absolute roll to clinch the number one seed. And even last year, they finished off on a really good second half of the season. But 9 of 11? That's a tall order, even when you're firing on all cylinders. And this football team's not close to that right now. So it's not over. I'll continue to say it's not over. And because what else are we going to do here? Well, if we're going to say it's over, then I'll go watch something else on Sundays, right? So I'm not ready to say that, but I'm not going to sit here and paint a rosy picture because there's anything but that when you're 1-5 and looking at a heck of a run of football that's going to be required here just to get to the playoffs, let alone talking about any of the goals that you and I have talked about for this team and what, Super Bowl or bust and all of that. I mean, you don't even deserve to utter the word Super Bowl when you're 1-5.
Luke Jones is here. He is a Baltimore Luke. We're trying to be sane in our observations of sort of a new low for the Ravens at this point at 1-5. I don't, know where we go. Harbaugh and I wrote a letter to Harbaugh. I hope everyone reads it. A dear John Harbaugh, as it were. The headline is, and no shocker to me, still searching for the accountability and integrity that none of you seem to possess. And I said, let's start with an opening proclamation. I won't be the fool who ignites the fire John Harbaugh chants, but there's plenty of fire Zach Orr, right? I mean, there's plenty of do something, give us someone's head, give us Todd Monken's head for running the ball four times at the goal line and chicanery of Mark Andrews and taking Derrick Henry off the field in circumstances and just the fact that they ran the ball really well and still scored 3 points on Sunday. Like there's just so much low-hanging fruit of purple bad here that I want to give you the choice of whether you want a plum or a pear.
I mean, 3 points scored is it's their lowest output since they were shut out by Tampa Bay in the home opener in 2022. I mean, that's what we're talking about here in terms of a home game scoring output, 23 years.
You
It
said
was that bad.
2022. It was 0-2.
2000. Yes,
There you go.
you know I meant
And that was
2002.
the week that Johnny Unitas
Yes,
died,
that was
right?
Chris Redman wearing the black high tops, and they were shut out. Yes, I obviously meant 2002.
That was
I
Brian Billick.
apologize.
My God, that was a long time ago.
And well. You score 3 points, right? I mean, unless you're talking about a safety, there's only one other alternative. It's being shut out when you manage 3 points in a football game. So, look, I mean, it was nice to see the running game get going to the degree that it did because we haven't seen that. I mean, I know I shared this with you at some point last week where, they were that long Justice Hill touchdown in garbage time in Kansas City away from being. Having four straight games without 100 rushing yards as a team, right? I mean, that's what kind of stretch they were on. So I like seeing that. That's why I said in a vacuum, look, I'm not shocked by what I saw Sunday from the standpoint of Cooper Rush is not good. Lamar Jackson's one of the best football players on the planet. That right there alone, before you get to anything else, is going to make a difference. But you've got to be able to get 1 yard. When you've got three shots at the 1 yard line, I mean, I don't care what the play call is, whether you and look, they've run the tush push with Andrews going back a couple years now. And that's something that they haven't run with the degree of success that Philadelphia has. No one has to that degree, but they've certainly been able to do it in the past. So now doing it back to back plays, I'll hear doing something different there. I'll hear giving Derrick Henry another shot at the 1 yard line. But at the same time, your offensive line has to move people. And that's where Sunday, the better performance aside, that's still been such an issue for them here in 2025 to be able to move people at the line of scrimmage and block, run block consistently and pass protect, obviously. I mean, this offensive line has its woes. I mean, we've been talking about it for a while now. At some point, don't you need to try to put some other guys in there, give someone else a look? I mean, are you really that invested in Daniel Faalele and Andrew Voorhees? Ronnie Stanley exited a game for the second time in 3 weeks. The other game he was inactive. That ankle continues to be an issue. That's three straight games now where they basically haven't had him on the field very much. That's a problem because Joseph Noteboom is not
Not
nearly
ready
as good
for
as him.
prime time,
And
I would say, right?
not even as good as Patrick McCary as a backup to Ronnie Stanley, I would say. So, talked about the McCary thing. And look, that's not a criticism of saying the Ravens should have paid Patrick McCary $12 or $13 million a year, like he's getting in Jacksonville. But,
Maybe they
that's a.
could have done better than Cooper Rush if they needed it.
Sure. I mean, look, Eric DaCosta has to wear this too. when you look at what
I
this
pointed
team
that
has.
out. I didn't write to him. I wrote to Harbaugh, but he
I
can
mean, it's
CC. He
everybody.
can CC Eric. Yeah, I told him he can
It's
CC Eric.
everybody. I mean,
Yeah.
come on now.
This is
Like,
about Steve, too. Unc Steve, by the way, too.
one in five is not on one person, one coach, just the coaches, just one player, just the absence of one player. All of the it's everyone, right? I mean, it's everyone. When you're one in five, there is plenty of blame to go around. But yeah, I mean, they signed Cooper Rush in mid-March, and don't get me wrong, you know that it's not as though he's making insane backup quarterback money, but he's making more than the vet minimum. And I'll say this much, for what we've seen out of him in 2 weeks, I'd just assume a run it back with Josh Johnson at the league minimum, right? I mean, the little time that we saw him looked better than what we've seen from Cooper Rush, and you know it's not a high bar, but you know that didn't work out. Jaire Alexander continues to be a zero in terms of, I mean, he didn't even play on Sunday. He was active, but didn't play, right? And, you know, that, not saying it was big money, but still $4 million, right? I mean, that's $4 million that can go to another depth spot or however you want to invest your, you know, we talk about it. And every time you spend money, there's opportunity cost, right? That you could have spent it somewhere else on augmenting your depth elsewhere. Jaire Alexander, it's not good enough to play, apparently, right? I mean, continue to ask about him, and you know, he's not out there. So you have that. DeAndre Hopkins, look, DeAndre Hopkins has played well. That said, has it resulted in the offense being better collectively? No, it hasn't. And you know, the offensive line has its issues, and you know, Rashad Bateman's disappeared from the offense entirely, right? I mean, so you look at these offseason acquisitions, and you just kind of say, what's really worked? You know, what's worked to make this team better? And it's tough to kind of look at it and say, oh, wow, that was a move that really paid off. Like I said, Hopkins has played well individually, but has it made their offense better collectively? I'd say no, just because of, and that's not his fault, or, but just the group as collectively is not as good as it was last year. So, a lot of questions, obviously. I mean, lots of areas they can address. They have, what, 3 weeks until the trade deadline? You know, how much do you try to salvage this roster? Or are there so many holes where you say, is it worth it to do that because you are one in five? And, you know, unless you're acquiring someone that you say, okay, we'll have him for next year, you know, one of those kind of deals, you kind of look at this thing and say, what can you realistically do to save this thing in terms of player acquisition? I mean, they're going to need another outside linebacker at this point. I mean, they have three healthy ones on their 53-man roster, and one of those guys is David Ajabo, right? I mean, who, you know, we don't need to belabor that point after talking about him for 3 years. So, you know, there's a lot of soul searching going on right now, and a lot that could happen. John Harbaugh was asked again about changes to his coaching staff after the game. Seemed to, you know, express an expectation that there won't be any, you know, for fans that are demanding a pound of flesh. As I said, the defense played better on Sunday than we've seen in recent weeks. I mean, good. That was good to see, but they certainly haven't earned the trust to say that they're going to be consistent enough now moving forward to again go back to needing to win a 9 of 11 games, right? I mean, there's no kind of trust in that way. So, I mean, if they're not going to make coaching changes, and look, like you said, people are mad, and I get that. People deserve to be mad at 1-5. I totally understand that. In the same way, we talked about it when the Orioles were 16-34. I completely get that. I'm not going to belittle that. People can be ticked off. They should be ticked off because this team was supposed to be the overwhelming Super Bowl favorite in the eyes of so many. But at the same time, can I sit here with conviction and say, oh, things will definitely be better if they would just fire Zach Orr, or they would fire this coach or fire that coach or make this specific change? I certainly think you need to look at this thing realistically and say, I don't think you can maintain the status quo across the board in terms of lineup and play calling and all of that. But I don't think this is necessarily, oh, well, fire Zach Orr and put Chuck Pagano in place and everything's fine. Well, who's playing on the defensive line? Who's getting any pressure on the quarterback whatsoever, right? I mean, go through the issues there. Go through the issues they have at linebacker, right? Where, Teddy Buchanan and Trenton Simpson are playing, and yeah, Roquan Smith will come back, but we haven't seen the best version of Roquan Smith so far this year either, other than the Cleveland game. So there's a lot. I mean, there's a lot. And guys like me can point out the run they went on in 2019 where they won their last 12 in the regular season, or they won their last five in 2020 when they were in peril, or winning 10 of 11 in 2023, or winning seven of their last nine last year, right? We'll hear that. And by all means, it's worth pointing out they are going to be better with Lamar Jackson back on the field. How could you not be comparing them to Cooper Rush or Tyler Huntley? That's Captain Obvious stuff. But are they going to be, is that going to cure all that ails them right now? No, because again, these issues were there even before the injuries really piled up these last 2 or 3 weeks. And as I said, and we saw this with the Orioles, the same thing, right? Just because you have a rash of injuries early on, that doesn't mean it swings in the opposite direction the rest of the way and you're really, really healthy. You heard me talk about their health a lot last year and in the offseason, lamenting the fact that they stayed as healthy as they did and they didn't take advantage in terms of being able to make a deeper playoff run. Just knowing that you don't have extremely healthy years like that every year because it's the NFL and it's a violent sport. But, and you just look at all that needs to go well the rest of the way. It's not impossible, but boy, it's a tall order at this point in time. And that's before we even get into some of the things that you were alluding to in terms of where is this team from a leadership standpoint, coaches and players? Where is this team from an accountability standpoint, coaches and players? And where is this team purely from a belief standpoint in terms of do they believe in one another as players? Do they believe in the coaches? Do the coaches believe in the players? Is there trust that's going to be required to go on the kind of run that they're going to need? And I have my doubts about some of those things because you know what I'd say? If all those things were truly where they need to be, they wouldn't be 1-5 right now. That's just how I feel. So, man, I don't know what the magic elixir is, Nestor. I'm not smart enough to figure out exactly what can get them perfectly on track here to the degree that they're going to need the rest of the way. But as it's presently constructed, and we were saying this even a few weeks ago, whether it's the sum isn't as great as the parts or however you want to describe it, not good enough. And that's the obvious statement when you're a 1-5 football team going into your bye.
Looking for somebody's head, looking for somebody to be fired, whether the defensive schemes are good enough, whether the players are good enough, whether the players will be good enough. Walking through the locker room, and this is what I wrote to Harbaugh, the fact that these guys run out the back door and want me to respect them as a fan on the outside or as a reporter on the inside or as somebody just sort of paying attention to what King Henry is willing to do, each and every week, win or lose, fumble or no fumble, his fault or not his fault. There's a level of accountability throughout this thing that I've called Marlon Humphrey a pretend leader. I called Terrell Suggs a pretend leader. They never won the Super Bowl with him alone, right? Like with him, without Ray Lewis, without Ed Reed, without the other real leaders that I've seen. Right. Speaking of real leaders, even Matt Burke was on my LinkedIn page the other day. He must be reading my thoughts about his king. And I don't mean King Henry, but like there's a point here where the fans want X. You and I don't swim there. We just don't. I mean, sometimes why we don't get along with fans, because they're all yelling dumb stuff like fire the coach. The coach has $60 million on his deal. If you're writing on Facebook that you think John Harbaugh should be fired, he's not getting fired. So, and nor would that be a good idea for the season at this point.
Yeah, right
See
now. I mean, it's
Mancelino or whatever that is. You know what I mean?
yeah,
Like,
let me just interject for a moment. Look,
he's unfireable, which was my point, which, as I said, sort of is the root of the problem, that he's unfireable, really.
I'll say this much. Look, these are we're talking about billionaire owners here. So whatever's owed on his contract, if an owner feels that that's the right move to make, they'll do it. But they're not firing an 18th year head coach games into a season. I mean, let's live in reality, people. If they go six, if they if no, I'm serious.
You are right. Let's live in reality.
If
when
they
you
go,
say it's one of the nastier things I've ever heard you say, and it's hilarious.
I'm talking
it's
right
true.
Now.
It's
if
true.
They go, if they finish 6-11, if they finish 7-10 and miss the playoffs, as you know, I mean, the percentages say they're probably going to miss the playoffs, right? I'll hear that, and that's a way different discussion at the end of a season when a season goes as poorly as this one has gone, and if you're questioning leadership, you know, amongst the players and whether the coaches have the ears of the locker room, all that. I'll hear all of that when we get to December and January. Absolutely, because it's a discussion. Now, we can certainly still debate whether the Ravens will actually, Steve Bisciotti would actually do it, but what team is firing an 18th year head coach 6 games into a season, 6 months after they just gave him a contract extension? I mean, again, let's be realistic. Okay, like let's be realistic in terms of John Harbaugh's status in week 7 and week 8, right? Week 17, week 18, the off season, we can have a discussion, but that's that, you know, that's so okay, Zach Orr, look, if you and I are reconvening 24 hours from now and this is a Cam Cameron or Mark Trestman kind of situation where the Ravens made a decision to move on from Zach Orr, I'm not going to sit here and argue on behalf of Zach Orr. But at the same time, I see woes from a personnel standpoint with the Matabike injury and now the state of the edge rushers and say, okay, maybe Chuck Pagano does better, but they're still going to have, you know, so look, I understand fans are angry. I understand that typically correlates with wanting a pound of flesh, you know, someone to pay for it. And I'm not going to even jump on the table and say, no, the Ravens absolutely can't do anything like that. No, I mean, I wrote on Friday at BaltimorePositive.com asking if Sunday was going to be the last stand for Zach Orr. Defense played better. I mean, you couldn't be any worse than they'd been the last couple weeks.
Well,
right?
The first 5 minutes in the second half aside, it was a 3-3 ball game.
Well,
right?
It was. So. And even that second touchdown, I mean, that wasn't on the defense. I mean, Zay Flowers fumbled and they're on a short field.
Where was
right?
He after the game, by the way, huh? I mean, he makes all the credit card. My town. Woo! I love Baltimore. I've been here 5 minutes. It's just the whole theater of it all that I took on in the Dear John Harbaugh letter this week that I hope everyone reads for my birthday this week. It's just sort of like, how hard is it to stand up and be accountable after you win or lose, or just be a pro, be a professional? Like there is a level of just straight accountability of, I was on the field, I caught the ball, I dropped the ball, we won the game, we lost the game. That is just sort of a quid pro quo for ages amongst fans and a team. I don't trust most of this. And I went back to Justin Tucker because how dare I go there when nobody else would and nobody else does and their special teams aren't any good. And it dominated the offseason conversation except everywhere inside of their building. And I still have so many questions that I'll never be able to ask. But the team's 1-5 and looking for the pound of flesh that you talk about from the fan base. Dude, you were there. Tickets are $20 at 65 degrees.
Sure.
Nobody came. Like, it never rained. The tickets are paid for. Just all of the quit in the fans and the emptiness of the stadium before the game began, through the game, and at the end of the game after what happened last week, now going into a bye week, sitting on 1-5 and stewing on it the next 13 days before you can even possibly get to 2-5. And you know, I look over the hill at this schedule and say, NFC teams, they kicked their ass. Lamar's back. They'll be fine. They'll win 2 games. They'll at least be 3-5 when we start talking about them. They'll be 4-6. And I said to John, and you will, maybe you'll chuckle at this because you haven't read my piece yet. I know you haven't because it's kind of lengthy, curiously lengthy. I only write to John every 3 years. So, you know, when I can, I'm thrown out every day. You have to double duty every day. They run out the back door when you're in the podium room every week. So I got my pound of flesh from John because I hate him, according to his text. That he thinks I hate him for holding him accountable. It's th these are like children. It's like professional wrestling where he hits me with the brass knuckles and nobody sees it. Nobody, we have no audience. You have no audience. It's absurd. All of it is so absurd, but the basic accountability of where they are as a franchise when fans are leaving, nobody's there, and he's saying, like, one in five, what an opportunity. Who's got it better than us, John? As my seventh grade friend Lisa Bocklage wrote on her Facebook page, Lisa Bocklage Moses, she'll always be Bocklage to me. She's been married 40 years. She wrote, everybody, who's got it better than us? Everybody. I said, no, not the Jets. Not the
I was going to
Jets.
say, except the Jets,
Not
yeah.
the Jets. But like, people are making fun of them all over the internet. People are pissed. People left the stadium. To your point, everybody left the theater right around June 15th with the Orioles, right? I don't know when that happens with this football team. Because quite frankly, other than the Flacco bad year when my wife was dying and I was barely paying attention in 15, they haven't had a lot of like throw-ins. Even the years when Lamar's been hurt, he's given him some rope to get to the end. And I mean, Huntley almost won a playoff game, and he looked like a water bug again out there on Sunday. Like, that's kind of hard to stop, even though you look at him and say, can we give him 6 inches? You know what I mean? Like, but, you know, he does things that Lamar does that, you know, at least power the football forward on a day when Derrick Henry can move the ball and the offensive line isn't holding, jumping, jumping, holding, which. Obviously, the other team had a hell of a problem on the line with hard count.
Sure, no question. I mean, a couple things. Want to go back to, you talked
Cooper
about.
Rush, they paid him for his hard count.
I mean, you can probably get, maybe just have Mark Andrews do that,
Going to
right?
work in
Instead of.
comedy here this week. I'm getting with Mickey Coachella. I'll have an act worked up by the time they hit Chicago.
But I wanted to go back to what you mentioned as far as players after the game. I'll repeat what I said about Mark Andrews in Buffalo. Look. Zay Flowers and whoever else doesn't talk after the game, they owe me no accountability, right? I'm not that important, right? I don't have an inflated sense of self-importance whatsoever. But they're talking to their fans, and clearly the Ravens view that as talking to their fans. Otherwise, they wouldn't broadcast on Facebook Live and on a live stream the post-game press conference. So clearly that is done for the fans, right?
By the way, Harbaugh should read the threads underneath it there. He'd
Sure,
call his
yeah.
buddy Trump and have Meta taken down as a platform if he saw what is written about him while his lips are moving in front of thousands of fans in real time.
I mean,
It, there's no way
never.
he can even possibly know about it because he's not even in charge of his own building. Chad Steele is what he tells me, still to this day on text.
I mean,
That's
never.
how full of manure John Harbaugh is in dealing with me.
So you're speaking to your fans. And then the other element, and I talked about this a lot, when we were talking about the Mark Andrews thing last January, it's being accountable in the sense that don't leave your teammates out to dry to answer for you, right? DeAndre Hopkins was asked about Zay Flowers' fumbles. Why? Because, well, Zay Flowers wasn't there to ask about it, right? To ask. So, those elements, look, accountability, and I said this to you a couple weeks ago. When
It
we're
tells
talking,
me whether you're a grown up or
When
not.
we're, but
If
when
this
we're.
was my kid, if I was Mark Andrews' father and he walked out of Buffalo without taking the put, Joe Flacco's old man would have been there to kick his ass. I'm serious. Joe told me as much. By the way, he didn't play well
But I
enough to
w
win, but he's playing.
but I but I
16's a
w
weird number on him, too. I just want to point that out.
but I want to be clear, accountability when we're talking about players and coaches, it's much more than just talking to the media, right? Ultimately, they need to be accountable to each other, but it's like I said, you're speaking to your fans and you're not putting your teammates in a position where they must answer for you. So that's what I said with Mark Andrews. Said the same, I'll say the same thing about Zay
Dude,
Flowers
it's the old
or anyone
Roger
else.
Daltrey.
But
Who are you? Who are
contrast,
you?
because I want to point out a really good example. You mentioned Derrick Henry, but I want to point out another example that I saw this past week. Philadelphia Phillies. Orion Kerkring's error, which was absolutely horrible, right? I mean, the epitome of a
Season
pitcher
ending. Yeah.
panicking and making an error, a bad decision and bad execution, and it
That
costing
play's
you
been in
your
first
season.
place since you were 7 years old,
He
right?
Orion Kerkring is 24 years old. He stood at his locker at Dodger Stadium and answered all the questions. Look, and it's a
So did
fun.
Lee Evans, so did Billy Cundiff, so did Joe
But I know,
Flacco
but
after throwing the
I'm trying
puck.
to make it,
But yeah,
but I'm trying to
we have
give
a
you an
long history in this organization of be of standing up,
sure,
right?
but I'm trying to give an example that happened 4 days ago, right? I hear you. Orion Kerkren answered every question, and you know what other part element was there? Bryce Harper was right there, and Bryce Harper almost talked him through it. And you know what Bryce Harper repeatedly noted? How much of a zero he was in that series. Bryce Harper, despite some past clutch moments in Philadelphia in 2022, he was an absolute zero in that series. So there's an example where the guy that was the GOAT, and I don't mean the modern version, I mean the old school version of connotation of a GOAT in a game, faces the media, faces the fans, goes through and answers every question. And then the leader of the team, who played very poorly himself in that series, was right there to note, hey, this isn't on him. This is on me. And he took the accountability for it. Now, look, that's one example. And I'm not saying the Phillies are stand head and shoulders above other teams in that way, but there's an example of how it's done. And there's an example of, look, Philadelphia is a brutal market. You know, I mean, you want to talk about a much tougher market to play in than Baltimore? Philly's it. I mean, boo Santa Claus, all the different stuff that you've heard over the years. But there's a situation where a 24-year-old, he could have run and hide. You know, he could have tried to run and hide. He didn't. He faced the music, and the team captain, so to speak, was right there with him, lockstep, saying, "Don't put this on him. I was bad in this series. It's on me." You know, it's to me, I'll leave it at that. It's a pretty stark contrast compared to, Sunday. And look, Sunday wasn't a season-ending loss, although 1-5, it's feeling more and more that way. But man, there's a lot, and I certainly hope players are being more accountable to one another behind closed doors compared to that example of, just one example from Sunday's loss.
Accountability is our bi-week theme. I've inked a Dear John Harbaugh letter that I hope you read. I bit my lip open doing it, so I might be a little more quiet around here this week. Watch a little bit more Geddy Lee, a little bit more baseball this week as we gear up for AL and NLCS. We're on bye. I'm going to be talking football all week. I'm inviting a lot of my best visitors on to talk about sports and media and baseball and football and life, as well as put the Maryland Crab Cake Tour together. This is all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. I'll have Ravens scratch-offs to give away. I did have a little lucky batch there last week as we took the show back out on the road to Fadley's. We're going to get the Costas later in the week. It is my birthday week, and I will leave this accountability segment with what I have written in both of my books about the football team 25 years ago, a dozen years ago, which is my John Woodenism for the week, because Tuesday was John Wooden's birthday, my birthday, October 14th. John Wooden's my all-time favorite coach. I have books in here. I have quotes all over the walls. I've shared them with John Harbaugh many times. I used to have them glued down onto my laptop when I employed a lot of people here, and I would read these axioms to him when we would have breakfast out in the cafeteria, same cafeteria that Chad Steele tried to bully and intimidate me in back 3 years ago when he took my press credential away. And I would say this: I learn a lot about teams when they lose. Everyone's a hell of a winner. It's when teams lose that I learn where the bar for the character and integrity and the accountability is. Learning a whole lot about the Baltimore Ravens at 1-5. Go read my work. He's Luke. I'm Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. The Ravens will still be 1-5, and we'll still be here talking about it at Baltimore Positive.